You're listening to the Creative Seat Podcast, where the curious and creative come to listen and be inspired. I'm Samantha K. Henderson, independent producer and your host. If you're interested in finding out more about me or our guests, visit the website at www.thecreativeseat.com. Thanks to Film Craft Studio Gear for sponsoring this episode. Visit their website, www.filmcraftla.com, and pick up a customizable studio director chair today. It's legit my favorite creative seat. Film Craft does so many great things in the community, and I'm proud to be part of the Film Craft LA family. Our guest on this episode is Dr. Erin McDonald. She works as a science advisor for Star Trek and owns a production company that creates short films focused on women and the LGBTQIA community. Fans of sci-fi and Trekkies, this one is for us. Let's get Erin in the creative seat. Erin, you're in the creative seat. Please tell the audience what you want us to know about you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. Yeah, so a little bit about me. My background is actually in astrophysics. I kind of went through the academia route before moving into the entertainment industry. I currently work as the science advisor for the Star Trek franchise, which I'm sure we can get into a little bit from there. And my background, in the interim, I actually did some work in engineering. And so a lot of the management skills that I got from that have translated. And so now I actually own my own company and I work as a producer producing independent short films, particularly in the sci-fi and LGBTQIA space. And so that's of particular interest to me. And yeah, otherwise just freelance writing, living in LA, doing the entertainment thing.
Sounds like a great life.
We try.
Yeah. So I want to ask you more about, you know, what it means to be a science advisor for a show or a franchise like Star Trek. What is it that you do?
Yeah, there's a lot of hats that I wear. So I am essentially the person on deck. We have all of these shows under the Star Trek franchise. So there have been 5 shows in the last few years, starting with Star Trek Discovery, that the franchise has brought into being. And as the science advisor, my main role is just to make sure we don't say anything wrong. Like that's the most important, that's number one job, is don't say anything wrong in any of the shows. But on top of that, I help develop storylines. I work with primarily with the writers' rooms and with the showrunners to try to come up with ideas, to try to integrate more science into everything. And then that can extend all the way through the post-production process, like having meetings with post-production teams on like how a nebula looks or how black holes should look. So I really get involved through the entire process. And then sometimes it also requires me to reach out to folks that I know in the science space who might have more of a technical skill in one background. And usually that's like when we want to do a story based in something like biology or genetics, because my background's in physics and astronomy. I feel comfortable fact-checking biology and genetics, but I don't feel comfortable necessarily like building story based on that. And so that's where I reach out to colleagues and friends, and then they come in and help. But I'm kind of that first pass that the franchise does to try to make sure that we're getting the science right, which is a big legacy of Star Trek.
That is very interesting. And so I would imagine that your prep for this type of work is pretty intensive or extensive as well. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, I do get a lot of scripts. I think that's one thing that people don't necessarily realize about a science advisor. Once you think about it for a second, it makes sense. But like on the offset, you don't realize how much reading is involved, how much like story development and that sort of narrative approach is required. And so, yeah, like I just get handed dozens and dozens of scripts.
So you were saying that you get dozens and dozens of scripts. So it's a lot of reading, a lot of actual, you know, thinking in terms of like development, not just the science part of what you're looking at.
Yeah. And I think like the relationship grows over seasons. So usually when I first come in, it's just I get handed scripts and I just give notes. And then as my relationship and the trust builds between the showrunner and the writers' rooms, then they'll start bringing me in more on the story development aspect of it. Of like, let's get you ahead when we're starting to think of what we want to talk about and then make sure that we're approaching it correctly from that point.
Okay. So because I'm curious, I like to know, like, what is the most interesting part of that role?
There's a lot of creativity. So I think the most interesting part for me is learning the limit to say, let's not explain it. This is wacky and fun, but it's not rooted in science. So we are better off just letting it happen and let's not try to ascribe any science to it. And okay. That is a unique skill that takes learning, and it's fun. Like, it's a fun challenge, right? To try to build a science backbone on a storyline and then realize, like, oh no, like we've gone off the deep end of science, and that's okay because the story is still really good and the story comes first. So let's just not explain it and let it happen.
Okay. So you are able to just kind of be as imaginative as you like in that case.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And be really collaborative too. I think that's a big part of it is just, I like to say that it's just yes anding what the writers are trying to do, that they come to me and say, we have this idea. And my job is not to say, well, science doesn't allow that. It's to say, okay, well, what can we do with this?
Okay.
And sometimes we can't, but sometimes we can. And so there is a lot of creativity involved.
Okay. Can you tell us what it's like being in a writer's room with the writers and the showrunners? Like, what is that experience?
Yeah, I love it. You know, I fell in love with it from day one. I realized that that's really an environment that I thrive in, that the showrunners and the writers, you know, they work so hard at creating an environment where people are just allowed to be vulnerable and allowed to create stories and understand characters really deeply and just throw stuff at the wall. And they have the skill set to be like, all right, this is a bad idea, but I'm going to say it. It's in my brain. And sometimes it's like, nope, yep, that was a bad idea, but thank you. And sometimes it's like, well, okay, let's pull a little couple nuggets from there. Like there's a reason your brain went there. And so there's this really unbelievably collaborative environment that I learned about. And that's kind of what led me down the path of wanting to work in television and wanting to be a TV writer is like, I never enjoyed the prospect of being a creative working totally by myself. I like working with people. I like working with a group of people and coming up with stories together, I think is really powerful and a lot of fun. And that's kind of where, how television is made.
Oh no, that's awesome. That's great. So what most people won't know is that we were in a writer's group together and we had a great mix of film writers and TV writers. And so I'm always impressed with how TV writers can really take a small idea and really expand it into like a world that wasn't even thought of before, or put characters together that you wouldn't necessarily picture together before you've read the script. And so I admire that. So when you're in the writer's room and you're sitting with these creators and you guys are talking about like the story and then the science behind the story, has there been any experience where it when it doesn't work, like what, how do you pivot? So if the science isn't working and you can't just go with it, does that mean like you have to go back to the drawing board, or, you know, what's usually like the pivot?
Yeah, sometimes we do. There's been a few instances working on series where we come up with an idea in the writer's room and we have it based in science and we have a cool prospect, like cool way to go forward. And then we get notes either from like the higher production executives, you know, who are just like, well, we were really hoping it would look more like this, or this is more what we were looking for, or like literally logistical aspects of production and post-production of just saying, we can't make that work. We have to come up with something else. Like, we don't have the budget to visualize this, or we're not able to create maybe this sort of planetary environment.
Okay.
And so let's think of something else. Like a great example is just saying, you know, they're on an away mission on a planetary surface and they just do not have the budget for spacesuits. So it's like, let's just come up with a reason in our minds that they don't need spacesuits on this surface. And so, yeah, we're constantly pivoting. It's just, that's part of the art, I think, of TV making is just there are so many constraints and opportunities that you're just balancing every single day.
Okay, that's great. And so being in the writer's room, does that mean that you get writer's credits for episodes or how, you know, what is the normal process for that?
I would hope so, but I mean, I don't. And I try to make sure that I genuinely am giving credit for the episodes to these writers because they are the ones who are in the room every single day working really hard to develop these storylines and then working on the dialogue and the scripts. And I'm just there to help support them. And so my role really does fall into the support staff category of a writer's room. And that is a very broad ranging category, all the way from like writer's room assistants who are, you know, taking notes and making sure everything's moving smoothly, to personal assistants, to showrunner's assistants. Like there's all of this support staff that goes on in a writer's room who don't get writing credit. And there are even people who are working as writers who don't get writer's credit necessarily. Like sometimes you get a lot of staff writers who never get assigned an episode. So they never get a written by credit, but they're helping develop the story as well. And so to some extent, like that's just part of the job. You know, my role, I want to get into TV writing. I want to move up through a writer's room. And so I try to take that opportunity really seriously and just learn every time I'm in. And so some of the shows I work on now, I try to just shadow once a week and just sit in. And I'm there. And sometimes they do have questions or sometimes I have an opportunity to pitch ideas if people are feeling stuck and something comes to my mind, I have the ability to offer that. But for the most part, I mean, I'm just learning to see how a writer's room operates and then hopefully just build that skill set. So when an opportunity does come up to join that writing staff, that I'm ready, you know.
No, that's great information. And thank you for enlightening us on how that works in the writer's room. I think most of us who are in entertainment have a general idea about what a writer's room, but I don't think we understand necessarily that there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of different roles that are contributing to the success there to support the writers who are giving us these great stories every day, all day, right? Let's pivot and talk more about Erin's personal work. So Erin, as a writer, you know, being pre-WGA, and then that'll allow us to move into some of your other great creative work that we'll talk about, including your film. So what is that like? How does the experience working to supporting the writers in a writer's room translate into your personal writing? And how does being pre-WGA work?
Yeah, so pre-WGA as a term is kind of a catch-all for generally writers who want to be a part of the Writers Guild. And that's typically folks who are interested in television or feature film writing. But that can range from people who have a passing interest where they're like, oh, this is a hobby of mine. I'm going to try to sell my feature film. If it strikes big, then yay. If not, I'm happy to keep kind of living my life out somewhere else other than LA and continuing on. And that still is considered pre-WGA. But from a more stricter sense, like in Los Angeles, if you use the term pre-WGA, it typically refers to folks who are in a writer's room or who are involved in the production process who want to move into writing. So you're somewhere in that pipeline of like, whether it's going to be a year, 2 years, 5 years, I am on the track to eventually become a WGA writer. So that's kind of what that term pre-WGA means. And from a practical aspect, you know, I mentioned a little bit, but like sitting in a writer's room is a learning process. And if you consider yourself pre-WGA and you take that seriously in the sense like, I want to be a WGA writer, I want to be working in these rooms as a writing staff, you're constantly learning. And so you're watching the process, you're learning the hierarchy, you're learning how to interact with different showrunners. You know, there are levels, like it goes from staff writer to story editor to, you know, producer, executive producer, like there's all these levels to a writer's room. And some rooms do operate in a very strict hierarchy where a staff writer, unless called upon, doesn't speak. But there are other rooms where it's just open. It's egalitarian. Like, to anyone who's literally sitting in that room, they're like, oh, we just want to hear your ideas. We're just here to brainstorm and to build. And some showrunners are fantastic at maintaining that environment. But it all helps you learn. And okay. So for me, I'm just learning how the writer's room process works and how television is made and positioning myself to, you know, when there's an opportunity to join a writer's room as a staff writer, I'm ready to go. Okay. You know, and I understand how the process works.
Okay. Are you writing and developing your own scripts or a series in this process or as part of your goal to reach a writer's room?
Yeah, I think the main thing that you need to do as a pre-WGA writer is write a lot of your own scripts. You know, people will always ask you for samples. And so you do at least need two or three, I would say, samples ready to go, whether in whatever genre you want to work in. And because of my background, even though I'm not necessarily like a diehard, I must write science fiction writer, I know that my background in science plus my work in science fiction, those are the types of roles I'm going to be in. So I had to make sure that I had at least two science fiction scripts ready to go. And some people write those scripts with the intent to pitch them as pilots, you know, and to take them around to studios. But sometimes people like me is like, I just want to get hired as a staff writer. And I just want to have good scripts that show that I know how to write. I know how character and story development works. And that's all you really need to demonstrate. So there's a little bit of strategy when it comes to developing your scripts, but it just depends on what direction you want to go.
Okay, interesting. So would you consider pitching your scripts if the opportunity came up?
Yeah, there's a couple of stories that like I do feel, yeah, you can't help but not get attached to your scripts, right? Like there's always, whether I'm like, oh yeah, this is really a sample, like I'm not necessarily interested in selling this as a pilot, you're still attached to it. And if someone came up to you and they were like, hey, do you have any ideas for a TV show? I'd be like, oh, heck yeah. Like, here, let me tell you about this. But yeah, it's about the audience you're trying to reach with it and the strategy. Like if you have I do have an agent, so I'm able to just say like, hey, here's a sample I want you to take to get me hired, as opposed to having representation and saying like, here, I want to pitch this. You know, those are just kind of two different approaches.
Join the community and spark creative conversation. Share what inspires, motivates, or triggers your creative self. We're on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook at The Creative Seat. Find our guests on the website at www.thecreativeseat.com. So I know that you started a production company and that you are producing short films. And so let's just talk about the production company, its main focus, and then let's get into the film that you just did.
Yeah, thank you. So it's called Space Time Productions, and a lot of it was kind of my hand was forced last year with different California labor laws where they were like, all right, you're doing a lot of work as a freelancer. Like, you really need to be starting your own company or getting paid by a company to do this work, which is fair. That's fine. And I chose to go down the route of starting my own company and then using that as what's called a loan out company in the entertainment industry. So essentially Viacom CBS like hires Space Time Productions to hire me as a consultant. So it's all like, that's kind of the legal side of it. But what I realized when I went through the process of actually starting this company is that it did give me a lot of freedom to creatively make my own work. And that's kind of how I started down the short film game. Was realizing like I have a really good background in management. I'm very good at mentoring people, seeing big picture, managing budgets, managing timelines, meetings, all of those things. And I know a lot of very talented people who are right on the cusp of making it, however you define making it. But, you know, folks who are working regularly, we're in the industry, there's a lot of experience, but they're just like, three or four names down in their department and working on these big productions. And so trying to give them a production where they can shine and they can use that as a calling card for their skills and abilities really excites me. And from the storytelling aspect, what I was interested in is, coming from a sci-fi perspective, being able to tell women-focused and LGBTQIA-focused stories that typically aren't told in the genre space, and have that representation not just on screen, but behind the scenes as well.
Erin, tell us about Identities.
Yeah. So this is actually, it's been a wonderful sort of coming together of a lot of folks. So last year I made my first, in air quotes, legit. Like, I'm not kind of taking away from short films from anyone, because we all, there's the fact that any films get made ever is always a miracle. But like, with Every Morning, you know, we had a modest, like, 5-figure budget, and we were able to, you know, make something kind of mini feature film caliber. And so, taking everything I learned from that, I'm now making Identities as a producer. And that came into being because of a friend of mine I met through Star Trek, actually. She goes by Jessie Gender on YouTube, and she's a big Star Trek commentator. She's fantastic. Check out her YouTube channel. She's wonderful. But she had this sci-fi story that was about exploring gender identity in a, like, capitalistic corporate virtual environment, which I feel is very relevant to our society right now. And she asked if I would be interested in producing it. And so we got together, we kind of came up with a plan. We looked at what that would look like and what we wanted it to look like. And she's part of a streaming service called Nebula. Some people might be familiar with it. They are essentially like a YouTube creator-owned streaming service. So if you follow some of these big YouTubers like PhilosophyTube or Extra Credits or Jessie Gender, you can get a little extra content by subscribing through Nebula, or maybe early content. But Nebula is moving into originally produced pieces. And so when they heard that Jessie was interested in doing this project and she had a producer on board, me, they wanted to fund it and they wanted to host it on Nebula as like a Nebula original. And so we were so grateful. And thankfully, I had the experience of doing Every Morning that I came with some legitimacy, that they're like, okay, she can get a short film across right. The finish line. She knows who to hire. She knows how to go through insurance, permitting, like all the big, quote, grown-up stuff of filmmaking. That they entrusted me to make this film with Jessie. So we are going to be filming in early August. We just announced our entire cast. We have an amazing cast of folks who are going to be on it. And right now we're looking at, like, I want to say at least 70% women and gender nonconforming folks behind the scenes. Like, it's just a really cool group of people that we've been able to assemble, who are incredibly talented. And yeah, I can't wait. So if folks are interested, it's you can go to Nebula through, find, like, search Nebula Identities, get to the landing page, you can subscribe, get some behind the scenes content. And then the film should be up there by like end of this year, early next year.
All right, great. I'll definitely be one of the people looking forward to watching it and supporting you. I'm very familiar with Nebula just because I watch a lot of YouTube and a lot of tech cool. YouTube. So
totally.
And we'll also make sure that we have the shout outs and the links in our social media as well. So we'll follow you. Can you tell us what the short film is about, or is it too soon?
No, the top level is, like, it's essentially, if you imagine a not so far future environment where you get hired by a company and you start on day one and you enter a virtual world. So it's like you put on a headset and that's your orientation. And the first thing you do in orientation is you choose your avatar, and it's from a corporate approved set of avatars, and you are given a masculine version and a feminine version to choose from. And then essentially the idea is, like, well, what happens if you reject that? You know, how does that break the capitalist system and the corporate environment? And so it's about exploring that. A lot of the themes in it have been introduced by a lot of sort of queer commentators, this idea that you're a glitch in the system, like, in a good way, but you glitch the norm. And so very sort of cyberpunk feel in terms of, like, a little bit of the Matrix to how we look at gender identity and what that continues to look like in a capitalistic virtual environment.
Yeah, sounds exciting. So I'm going to definitely look forward to that.
So we have Jessie Gender, if you watch her on YouTube, she's actually going to be writing and directing. She's not in front of the camera. We got a huge group of amazing people. Some of the bigger names that we got are Jessica Nicole, who was on Fringe. We also have Jackie Cox, otherwise known as Darius Rose, but Jackie was on RuPaul's Drag Race. Some people might know them from that. And then we also got John Delancey, who is otherwise known as Q from Star Trek or Discord in My Little Pony. That's a lot of the queer community is familiar with. So, yeah. And in addition to that, I mean, we really just got a lot of great queer, non-binary folks who are just amazing actors. Ezra Reeves is going to be playing Alex, an important character in the story, and they are just an amazing actor, and we can't wait to have them on board. And if you're a fan of YouTube stuff as well, we got Abigail Thorne from Philosophy Tube, as well as Maggie Mae Fish is going to be in it as well.
This is exciting. So I know the Creative Seat community is going to be looking forward to watching it, right? Everyone out there?
Yeah.
Yay. So we're going to wrap up our interview. This has been so much fun, Erin. I always enjoy having conversations with you. Before we say goodbye, I would love to give you the opportunity to just give any advice that you would have for a creative out there. And usually we're speaking to someone that is like on the verge, like they have the idea. Maybe just life is happening every day. And, you know, sometimes we tend to deal with the life stuff and then let our creative side go a little bit. So can you give that creative any parting advice to get them moving into the direction? Because it just seems like, you know, for people like us with the creative brain, you know, this is how we live our best life, is by doing the things that we love.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do have a lot of sort of philosophical advice that I've taken to heart and I think has served me well over the years. I think one of the big things is just taking risks. One of my favorite, I have a couple quotes I'm going to throw at you, but like one of them is from Lucille Ball, who, when people ask how she could be so lucky, she said, like, luck, I've never heard of luck. Luck to me is hard work and knowing what is an opportunity and what's not. So it's not about like throwing spaghetti at the wall, because throwing that spaghetti takes a lot of effort. It's about, you know, seeing when it's right to throw that spaghetti, when those opportunities come up, and go like, no, this, if it's free work, this is free work that's worth it versus free work that's not worth it. These are people I want to get to know. This is a networking event that I need to be at versus like, do I really need to be at that? So there's a lot of sort of strategy involved in success. And then another quote that I really love is from Carrie Fisher that is, you know, stay afraid, but do it anyway. Like it's really, it never stops being scary to like send emails to very important people, to shoot your shot. And you might doubt yourself, but let me tell you, just coming in with confidence, if an agent comes to you and is like, hey, or you're approaching someone and they want to hear more about you and they're like, hey, can you send us some of your stuff? Just reply back right away with that confidence, knowing your stuff is good. Don't sit on it for 2 weeks. Don't second guess your stuff. You got it, you know? And so it just takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of risk, but showing up on time, being professional, being easy to work with is going to get you really far, just as long as you're taking those risks and you know what's your opportunity and what's not.
Thank you. I feel like you were speaking directly to me.
Happy to. It's hard. I say that with sympathy. Like it is, it never stops being hard for me. You know, it's like, God, you got to psych yourself up every single step of the way. And you've got to be constantly strategizing and just telling yourself like, no, I know how to do this. Or if you don't, like, figure it out.
Figure it out. Yeah. Right. That's my big thing. It's like, you can do whatever you want to do. It, you know, it may not come easy, but if you stick with it, do your research, find a mentor, read a book, you know, watch YouTube, whatever it takes. It's like you can train yourself. You could develop yourself and be successful at whatever it is you want to do, whether it's creative endeavor, entrepreneurship, you know, better health,
and I think,
et cetera.
I think helping people do their job does get you really far. You know, there's an old adage in this industry that's like every job is your audition for your next job. And it's like if you are easy to work with and you do what helps the other person get their job done, they'll call you next time. And yeah, I think that's incredibly valuable. So yeah, we're on the same page.
Yeah, we're on the same page for sure. Erin, again, it was a great conversation. I am going to look forward to watching Identities on Nebula when it comes out. In the meantime, I'll follow you and the rest of the Creative Seat community will follow you as well because we're all excited about it. Thank you for all of your insight, talking about what you do as a science advisor for Star Trek. That's a role that I think you're the only person that I know that has a job like that. And so it's very enlightening to learn what you do.
Thanks.
And it's very interesting and cool. Like you can actually say that, hey, I focused on STEM in school, but look where it led me. So ladies, you know, don't let it frighten you. Go for it.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what we were talking about. So anyway, it was great talking to you. And I look forward to doing it again soon. Creativity. It's like learning to ride a bicycle. You get on it, you fall a few times, then one day you're riding along with all the confidence. Then you decide to learn a new trick. Make sure to like the episode and leave a review. Shout out to Dub Poet Production for the music. Samantha K. Henderson signing off. Go do something creative.